It is the last day of school, sophomore year, in a small town in Ohio. A classmate at the back of the room swings a baseball bat. It slips out of his hands, and it hits a 15-year-old in the face. Broken nose, skull fractures, both eye sockets shattered. That boy will be flown by helicopter to a hospital in Cincinnati and put into a coma. And about 20 years later, he will write the best-selling habit book in the world. Today, Atomic Habits by James Clear. In two sentences, tiny, repeated changes compound into remarkable results, so stop chasing goals and build systems instead. And the way to build a system is to make each habit obvious, attractive, easy, and satisfying, until it becomes part of who you are. We will come back to that at the end, and turn it toward neurodivergent leaders and the people who work for them. From the reading room, this is 60 books. I'm Miles. One management book per episode, the kind a chief executive might quote at you, taken apart in 20 minutes. Today's book is not strictly a management book. It is the book on every executive's nightstand, and it shows up in the language of every leader who talks about 1% improvements, systems over goals, or making things obvious. If you are going to sit across from those people, you need to know exactly what is underneath the phrases. Nora, this one starts with the author, not with a company.
It does, and the story he opens with is his own.
Take me back to that classroom.
So James Clear grows up in Hamilton, Ohio. Baseball is his thing. And on the last day of his sophomore year, the bat comes out of a classmate's hands, and it hits him between the eyes. He describes the moment as strange and quiet, like being somewhere else. He tries to walk to the nurse's office. His memory is blurry. His nose is broken, his skull is fractured in multiple places, and both eye sockets are shattered.
And then it gets worse.
A nurse notices he has stopped breathing. He has a seizure. They put him on a helicopter to a larger hospital in Cincinnati and put him into a medically induced coma. His parents have to drive down while he is in the air.
He obviously survives.
He survives, but the recovery is long. Months before he can drive, double vision for a while. And the part that matters for the book is what happens when he goes back to baseball. Junior year, he gets cut from the varsity team, sent down to junior varsity. He was a serious player, and the injury took the year he needed. He barely plays as a senior.
So the baseball career is over.
It looks over. Then he gets to Denison University, a small college in Ohio, and he makes a decision that is almost embarrassing in how small it is. He is going to fix his sleep. He is going to keep his room clean. He is going to lift weights a few times a week. He is going to study on a schedule, nothing dramatic, just small things done every day.
And what happens?
By sophomore year, he has earned a starting spot. By senior year, he is named the top male athlete at Denison, and he is selected to the ESPN Academic All-America team, which that year was 33 players in the whole country.
From cut from varsity to an All-American.
And here is the point he makes about it. He never had a single transformative moment. There was no breakthrough. He just made a lot of small choices and kept making them, and eventually they added up to something he could not have planned. That is the book in one life.
Tell me about the man.
James Clear, born 1986, Ohio. After college, he did not go into business or academia. He started a website, jamesclear.com, in November of 2012, and he committed to publishing two articles a week about habits, decision-making, and getting better at things. He kept that up for years. The audience grew mostly through an email newsletter, which he still writes, and which now goes out to millions of people every week.
So the book grew out of the blog?
Directly. Atomic Habits came out in October of 2018. It has sold well over 10 million copies worldwide, and it has spent years, not weeks, on the bestseller lists. It is one of the best-selling nonfiction books of the past decade. He is careful to describe himself as a synthesizer rather than a scientist. His method is to read the research and the practitioners and turn it into something a person can use on a Tuesday.
What else should I know about him?
He is a weightlifter. He talks about it constantly, and he is unusually open about where his ideas come from. He credits B.J. Fogg at Stanford for the idea that became habit stacking. He credits Catherine Milkman at Wharton for temptation bundling. That matters later, when we talk about what is his and what is borrowed.
Okay, the ideas. How is the book built?
Four parts. First, the fundamentals, then four laws, one per part. Let me start with the fundamentals, because that is where the phrases come from that you will hear in a boardroom.
Start with 1%.
If you get 1% better every day for a year, you end up 37 times better. If you get 1% worse every day, you end up close to zero. That is arithmetic, and we will come back to whether it is more than arithmetic. But the story he hangs it on is British Cycling.
Go.
In 2003, British Cycling hires a performance director named Dave Brailsford. At that point, British cyclists had won a single Olympic gold in about a century, and no British rider had ever won the Tour de France. Brailsford brings in a philosophy he calls the aggregation of marginal gains. Break everything about riding a bike into its parts and improve each part by 1%.
What does that look like?
Redesigned bike seats, rubbing alcohol on the tires for grip, heated shorts to keep the muscles warm, testing fabrics in a wind tunnel. They found the pillow and mattress that gave each rider the best sleep and shipped them to every hotel. They painted the inside of the team truck white so they could see dust that might get into the gears.
And the results?
At the Beijing Olympics in 2008, British riders won about 60% of the cycling golds. At London in 2012, they set multiple world records. And in 2012, Bradley Wiggins became the first British rider to win the Tour de France, followed by Chris Froome, who won it four times.
So small things added up.
That is the argument, and the second fundamental is the one you will hear most often. Systems over goals. His line is that ambition does not lift you to the level of your goals, your systems catch you at whatever level they are built for. Winners and losers have the same goals. What separates them is the system.
There is a shape he draws for this.
The plateau of latent potential. He uses ice. A room warms from 25 degrees to 26, 27, all the way to 31, and nothing visible happens. At 32, the ice melts. The change looks sudden. It was not. He calls the flat stretch the valley of disappointment, because that is where people quit.
And the third fundamental.
Identity. Three layers of change. Outcomes, processes, identity. Most people start with outcomes. He says start with identity. Do not aim to read a book, aim to become a reader. And then the mechanism, every action is a vote for the kind of person you are becoming. You do not need every vote, you need a majority.
Now the four laws.
He builds them on a four-step loop. Cue, craving, response, reward, and each law is attached to one step. Make it obvious for the cue, make it attractive for the craving, make it easy for the response, make it satisfying for the reward. And to break a bad habit, you flip each one. Invisible, unattractive, difficult, unsatisfying.
Law one, make it obvious.
Three tools. First, a habit scorecard, where you write down everything you do in a day and mark each one plus, minus, or neutral just to see it. Second, implementation intentions, a formula. I will do this behavior at this time in this location. Third, habit stacking, which he took from Fogg. After my current habit, I will do the new habit. And then environment design. If you want to practice guitar, put the guitar in the middle of the living room. He tells a story about a hospital cafeteria in Boston where they added bottled water to every station, and without saying a word to anyone, water sales rose and soda sales dropped.
Law 2, make it attractive.
This is the dopamine chapter. He leans on research from the 1990s by Wolfram Schultz, who found that dopamine in monkeys spiked not when the reward arrived, but when the cue predicted it. Anticipation drives action. So the tool is temptation bundling, from Milkman's work. She gave people Paige Turner audiobooks they could only listen to at the gym, and gym attendance went up. Pair the thing you need to do with the thing you want to do. And there is a social chapter here too. We imitate the close, the many, and the powerful, so join a group where your desired behavior is the normal behavior.
Law 3, make it easy.
The 2-minute rule. When you start a new habit, it should take less than 2 minutes. Read before bed becomes read one page. Run 3 miles becomes put on your running shoes. The point is to master showing up. Then there is a distinction he is very proud of, motion versus action. Planning, researching, reading about the thing is motion. It feels productive and produces nothing. Action is the thing itself.
And there is a story here about a class.
Photography class, as he tells it. The professor splits the students. Half will be graded on quantity, 100 photos for an A. Half will be graded on quality, one perfect photo. At the end of term, the best photos all come from the quantity group because they spent the semester shooting and learning from mistakes while the quality group spent it theorizing. Hold on to that story. It comes back in the critique.
Law 4, make it satisfying.
Last law is about reward, and the rule is that what gets rewarded immediately gets repeated. The problem is that good habits pay off later and bad habits pay off now. So you add an immediate reward. His favorite example is a young stockbroker named Trent Diasmid, who put a jar of 120 paper clips on his desk and moved one to a second jar every time he made a sales call. Within 18 months, he had brought in millions of dollars of business for his firm. Habit trackers are the same mechanism, and the rule that goes with them is never miss twice. Missing once is an accident. Missing twice is the start of a new habit.
And the back of the book.
A few advanced ideas. Play a game where the odds favor you. He contrasts Michael Phelps' long torso and short legs built for swimming with the runner Hicham El-Gerouj's short torso and long legs. Both elite, swap their sports and neither is. Then the Goldilocks rule, motivation peaks on tasks just beyond your current ability. And a warning about the downside of habits. Once something is automatic, you stop paying attention and you stop improving. So he prescribes reflection, an annual review and a periodic integrity check on whether the habits still serve the identity.
All right, what is not held up?
Start with British cycling, since it is the flagship. In 2018, a committee of the British Parliament concluded that the professional team built out of that program, Team Sky, had crossed an ethical line in its use of medication that was permitted under the rules. And in 2021, the team's former doctor was struck off the medical register after a tribunal found he had ordered testosterone knowing, or believing it, was to dope a rider. None of that erases the marginal gains work. It does mean the headline example of small honest improvements may have had some large dishonest ones mixed in.
The photography class.
In his own endnotes, Clear says the original story is about a ceramics class from a book called Art and Fear, and that he changed it to photography. It is a parable, not a documented experiment. He is transparent about it. Most readers never see the note.
The 1% math.
It is arithmetic, not a finding. Real skills do not compound at a fixed daily rate, they plateau, they saturate, and 1% of what exactly is never defined. It is a motivating image. It is not a model.
What about the science underneath?
This is where the book is stronger than critics admit. A few of its pillars rest on solid evidence. Implementation intentions, the if-then plan, have a large research base going back to Peter Galwitzer in the 1990s, with a 2006 meta-analysis showing consistent, medium-sized effects. Choice architecture, moving the water bottles, is well documented. The time it takes to form a habit, which he puts at roughly 2 months on average with a wide range, comes from a real 2010 study by Philippa Lally and colleagues. Where the book is thin is on its own contributions. Identity-based habits, habit stacking, the two-minute rule, plausible, widely used, and mostly untested as specific interventions.
And the originality question.
Habit Loop is a recut of Charles Duhigg's Power of Habit from 2012, which itself drew on older behavioral science. The tiny behaviors idea is Fogg's, who had been teaching it since 2011. Clear credits both. His contribution is the packaging, four laws, memorable in order. So the tier is practitioner synthesis, sitting on a handful of genuine evidence pillars. Not peer-reviewed, and better sourced than most of the shelf.
Now the turn. Let me say the summary again in the frame this show exists for. For a neurodivergent chief executive, or one leading neurodivergent staff, Atomic Habits is a book about consistency written for people who have it. Its real value is the opposite of its pitch. Not that small habits compound, but that you can build an environment that does the remembering, the starting, and the rewarding, so that the work no longer depends on attention or willpower showing up on schedule.
And the usual flag. What follows is coaching judgment applied to practitioner material. A way to talk, not a research finding.
Start with identity.
This one cuts both ways. Many neurodivergent adults carry an identity that was handed to them by years of missed deadlines and lost keys. Clear's idea that every action is a vote is powerful for rewriting that, but it has a shadow. If the environment is not built, every missed day becomes a vote against, and the identity project turns into a shame engine. So the coaching move is to choose identities that are compatible with the profile. Not, I am a person who never forgets. Rather, I am a person who builds systems so nothing depends on my memory.
Make it obvious.
This is the law that neurodivergent people should underline. There is an established principle in the ADHD literature, from Russell Barkley, that ADHD is not a problem of knowing what to do. It is a problem of doing what you know at the point of performance. The fix is to move information out of the head and into the environment at the exact moment and place the action is needed. Clear arrives at the same conclusion from the other direction and calls it environment design. So if a chief executive says make it obvious, they have just endorsed the single most important accommodation for an ADHD employee, whether they know it or not.
Make it attractive.
Two notes. First, temptation bundling is close to native for ADHD. Immediacy of reward matters more, not less, for a brain that discounts the future steeply, so pairing the boring task with something enjoyable is not a hack, it is a requirement. Second, a caution on the social chapter. Imitate the close, the many, and the powerful is good advice for a neurotypical joiner. For an autistic employee, it can read as an instruction to mask, to perform the group's habits at cost the group never sees. A leader using this idea should build a group whose norms include difference, not one that demands conformity to earn belonging.
Make it easy.
The 2-minute rule is a task initiation tool, and task initiation is one of the hardest executive functions for many neurodivergent people. Starting is the wall, not doing. So put on your shoes is exactly right. Motion versus action is also useful and dangerous. Research and planning can be a very comfortable place for an anxious or perfectionistic mind to live indefinitely. Naming it as motion gives a leader and an employee a shared word for it. And the one-time choices, buying the better chair, unsubscribing, automating the bill, are decision load reduction, which matters for anyone whose day has a fixed budget of decisions before things fall apart.
Make it satisfying.
Here is where the book quietly assumes a neurotypical reader. Habit trackers work for a lot of people with ADHD right up until the first miss, and then the broken streak becomes evidence for the old identity, and the tracker gets abandoned. The rule that survives variability is never miss twice. Not never miss. That reframes a miss as data rather than verdict. And the accountability partner and the habit contract, which Clear treats as optional advanced tools, are not optional for a profile whose core difficulty is consistency. External accountability is the structure.
And for autistic leaders specifically.
Routine is often a strength, and habits form and stick. The risk runs the other way, habits hardening into rules that do not flex when the situation changes. Clear's own chapter on the downside of habits, the reflection and review, is the piece to emphasize. Build the habit, schedule the check on whether it still serves.
The Goldilocks rule
maps directly onto deep interest. Tasks just beyond ability, in an area the person cares about, is a description of the conditions for hyperfocus. And play a game where the odds favor you is job crafting again, the same point we made about seats on the bus last episode. Choose the sport that fits the body. For a leader, that means shaping roles to the person rather than the person to the role.
So the recap in that frame.
The environment remembers. The environment starts. The environment rewards. Identity is chosen to fit the profile, misses our data, accountability is structural, and the system is reviewed so it stays a tool and does not become a cage. That is Atomic Habits for a neurodivergent leader.
Last piece, where does artificial intelligence sit in this?
Cleanly, because the four laws are a map of what these tools are good at. Make it obvious. An AI assistant that surfaces the next action with its context attached, the document, the last message, the one thing to do, at the time it is due, is externalization at the point of performance. Make it easy. The blank page is the hardest 2 minutes there are, and a first draft from a model, even a bad one, turns starting from nothing into editing something. Task decomposition into 2-minute starts is the same idea. Make it satisfying, automated tracking that a person does not have to remember to fill in, and a generated weekly review that reflects progress back without judgment.
And make it attractive.
This is where I would be careful. Gamified nudges from software are a known pattern, and for some people they work. For a brain that is already sensitive to novelty, a tool that rewards engagement with the tool can become the distraction it was meant to cure.
Cautions.
Two, as always. First, the evidence that AI support improves outcomes for neurodivergent workers is early, mostly practitioner reports and small studies, so treat it as promising practice. Second, Clear's own distinction. Setting up tools, comparing tools, tuning tools is motion. It feels like building a system. The system is only real once the habit runs through it, and the test is whether the thing got done on a bad day.
Nora, thank you.
Thank you.
That is Atomic Habits. Next time on 60 Books, The Effective Executive by Peter Drucker, the 1967 book that almost every later management book is quietly rewriting. I'm Miles. See you then.